Welcome to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 46, and I am Libby, your host, and we have returning guests.
Marcia from Los Angeles.
Peter from Los Angeles.
Greg from St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, the snow!
Oh, we got buried 9 to 10 inches. We're digging ourselves out. It's pretty bad.
Yes, you should move to LA.
I used to live in the Midwest, so I feel your pain.
All right, and this week in the news, I have that Ethan Hawke has been picked up. Well, not him himself, but the pilot that he's in has been picked up by Fox. The pilot is called Exit Strategy, and it's basically a CIA extraction team. And I was like, that sounds remarkably like 24 for Fox, but I'm interested, so I'll probably check it out. The next thing I have is that Liam McIntyre has been hired as the new Spartacus for season 2, and they're going to start shooting season 2 of Spartacus in the spring. And I've seen pictures of him. He's Australian, and he has like Andy Whitfield's brow, and that's about it. He looks about 10 years younger, 5 to 10 years younger. So that's going to be a little strange, but hopefully he's good. So all of us who are used to the Doctor can just, like, close our eyes and pretend.
Hey, I have a bit of news.
Go for it.
Well, I don't know if anybody's been paying attention to the whole Wonder Woman thing. Like, all the studios passed on it.
Yes.
Studios passed on it for a movie, and then the TV networks passed on it. However, they just announced yesterday that NBC has now picked up Wonder Woman. They were actually the last to pass on it, but I guess they've changed their mind. And it's David E. Kelly, I guess. He made a pilot, or he has plans on a pilot for it. So I guess, in theory, we will see a Wonder Woman pilot in the fall.
Except the way that they're describing it, it sounds more like she's going to be a regular person who is, you know, a legal person by day and a superhero by night.
Well, that's Wonder Woman.
That's kind of Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I was about to say, that was Wonder Woman.
Yeah, except I think in that world, she's like a military officer, right? I think
yeah.
That's
right. Yeah, but she...
So that's not too much of a stretch.
Right. She was in the Air Force, if I recall correctly.
Right, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's the Air Force, yeah. But the point being, she has some kind of like, some kind of job where she's in a suit, you know, a pantsuit or whatever, and then she becomes Wonder Woman. So that's... And it's David E. Kelly... So lawyers, of course, that makes sense.
Yeah, dude, yeah. Stay in your comfort zone.
Right. So yeah, that's the only thing I heard.
Anybody else? Okay. We're going to move on to shows, and the first show we're going to talk about is House. It comes back after its winter hiatus, and it came back with an episode that I thought was at least pretty entertaining. You have House is being visited by Cuddy's mother, and the case was a hero guy, and House thinks that the hero complex is actually a symptom of the disease, and him and her character's name is Masters. But basically, her and House are going head-to-head on what they think the case is, and they're going back and forth, and I find...
Well, she's always the optimist. So right. She wants to believe that he's a hero. She wants to believe that, you know.
Right, but the thing that's funny is that the rest of House's people he's basically beaten them down to the point where they don't fight him anymore. They're just like, yes, House, we'll do what you want. Yes, I'm not even trying to be an optimist anymore. All right. You know, they have this like kind of like downtrodden attitude, and she's the only one still with like the fighting spirit to go against House, and I do find that interesting, but I am curious to see how long it's going to take before House beats her down, too. So that's the entertainment value of the show at the moment. What do you guys think?
I thought the other...
Yeah. Oh, wait, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just thought the other cool thing was that, you know, House typically is wrong about his diagnosis, you know, all the way up until he has his epiphany at the end.
Right, exactly.
And she was on the right track to actually finding what the real cause was. He just sort of figured it out before she did.
Well, she was kind of on the right track from the beginning.
Yeah.
And he basically stopped her from figuring it out. Because he was like, yeah, you're stupid. Let's do this other thing. So, yeah, that would actually be interesting if they did a case where she figures out what it is in the her very first guess, and House stops her, and the patient dies. That would be awesome. They should totally do that.
Huh. Yeah, that's kind of a cop.
Also interesting that they got, I thought it was kind of cool, I don't know, there's people watching movies from the 90s, but the guy who was the big hero was Matthew Lillard. Anybody remember that guy? He's from like a bunch of movies in the 90s.
Not at all. He looks vaguely familiar, but the name doesn't sound familiar.
But you know, I thought he looked a little, haggard, a little worse for wear, but it was just cool to see him, because I was like, oh, I haven't seen that guy in a while, so, you know, happy to see him.
So what did you think of Cuddy's mom, the whole dinner party?
You know, I wish the trailer totally, the promo for it totally ruined the big moment, although the more I think about it, because it's Candace Bergen, I guess I would have known that, I forgot what it is, but basically House always, he does those rounds where he's basically seen like the public, like right, general outpatient.
Right, the clinic, it's stuff. The clinic, yes.
The clinic. So he sees people, so in the promo, we see that he sees Candace Bergen and she's like, and you're doing my daughter or something like that. Like, but because it's Candace Bergen, I guess I would have known anyways, because there's no way Candace Bergen is just a person of the clinic for 2 seconds. But I kind of didn't like the promo ruin that for me. But I thought I liked it enough. I liked the comment. I kind of wish they didn't have to do the whole, oh, look, he drugged him. He drugged her and Wilson. Like, that's a little goofy for me, you know, but – you know, whatever, but like that. But that aside, you know, I like having her on the show. Like, I thought she was a good casting choice for the mom and everything.
What do you think, Greg?
I thought that scene was funny, kind of because I kind of expected that after he drugged her, that that Cuddy would be really really upset. But her mom was giving her so much trouble that she was actually kind of relieved.
Yeah, I thought it was funny too. I like the fact that he also drugged Wilson. I thought that was hilarious. I was laughing my butt off through the whole scene. So I actually liked that. That was one of my favorite scenes. So yeah, that worked for me.
All right.
Next up, we want to talk about Chuck. And this week's episode was the big proposal, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous for him to try to pull off in the middle of a case. But that's just my opinion.
Wait, he proposed to Miranda from Mass Effect 2?
Yes, her name is not Miranda on the show.
And she doesn't have her cool, sexy accent, right?
Yes, yes. But it was just really like, they're in the
Did
middle
of... Did she say yes?
Well,
you can tell
not,
me it's fine.
Not, well, she would have said yes if they hadn't interrupted and arrested her and sent her out of the country.
What?
Yes, exactly. It was
one of the many reasons I don't watch it anymore.
Yeah. Go ahead, Greg. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was kind of entertaining. You know, it basically started out that Chuck was trying to work with the bearded guy.
Morgan,
thank you. I was trying to work with Morgan to, you know, have this perfect proposal and everything, and everything just they just arranged it so everything kept getting in the way. So he tried to do it in a restaurant, and then right when he was going to propose, she told him this horrible story about how that's how her parents proposed, and that's why it ruined their lives or something. So he didn't want to do it there, and then they go to France, and then he's going to propose there, and everything gets in the way. But I like the fact that she figures the whole thing out of what he's trying to do, and then she finds Morgan and then takes over the whole operation of the proposal from Chuck.
Yeah, that was amusing, because Morgan totally cracked within 5 seconds. She flipped him to be a double agent. It was great. That was probably the only thing I enjoyed about that episode was the fact that she managed to flip Morgan. But then I just thought that the end was so cheesy. It's like he finally does a proposal. He gets out the ring. He's like, will you marry me? And freaking commandos show up and arrest her. And I was like, what? Come on. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I have to go undercover on this top secret mission. Maybe it'll be a month. Maybe it'll be years. I'll see you when I get back. What? Come on, man. It was so cliche that I wanted to break something. So, but on the plus side, Chuck will be without her for the foreseeable few episodes at least. And that'll be a relief for me, at least.
You don't like her character on the show?
I don't mind her character. I hate her relationship with Chuck.
If they I don't really watch Chuck, so I'm just wondering.
I'm just saying, if they managed to have her character on the show without it being sappy and saccharine, I wouldn't mind her. But they really haven't figured out how to do that. And the things that they're doing this to keep them apart are so cliche that they were cliche in the 80s. So it's just hurts my head.
Anyway. Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder about how things that are cliche are really all about how it's done. I was talking to a friend about something else, and they thought that something was really one-dimensional, and I was just like, well, I mean, I guess I can see what you're saying, but it didn't affect me that way. So it's kind of weird, you know, like, don't get me wrong. I totally think that there's a lot of things, especially going back to like House, there's a lot of things to me like that I feel like are kind of for House are kind of cliche. But like you guys thought that the big comedy thing worked. You know, for me, that's just seems like kind of easy. It's just like, oh, of course they do that kind of stuff. But I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if maybe it's just, I don't know, maybe it's not really about whether it's cliche or one-dimensional. It's just whether for us as a viewer, it just hits us that way. And whereas right. The other person might be like, oh my God, that was awesome. You know, so.
I could see that. I could see that. All right, let's move on to the next show, The Cape. Comments?
Speaking of, actually, I don't want to be hard on The Cape because I like The Cape. But The Cape is the kind of show that I really feel like you can't oversell. It doesn't have the best budget. It's not like the best actors in the world. And it's not even like really the most original story. And it's certainly not the best effects in the world. However, I've now seen 3 hours of The Cape, the 2-hour premiere and this episode. And I really enjoy it. Like, I really like it and everything. I mean, obviously you got Summer Glau, so that's a positive, and Keith David, but I thought it was good. I was worried. Basically this week's episode was, you find out, of course, that this Russian crazy guy breaks out, and he's a sociopath, and he, I guess, was one of the guys, he was the original guy, or one of the guys who had the cape, or he was the person who had the cape before our hero.
Right.
Of course, but he used it for evil. And my heart sunk a little, because I was like, oh, really, we're going to do this story again, you know? But they pretty much resolved it in one episode, pretty much. I mean, they don't kill the bad guy, so in theory, they could do more with this if they want to, but... actually, I thought it was entertaining and stuff. I enjoyed it and everything. And I thought the guy seemed like a threat. He can kill people with cards, you know. So, so I enjoyed it. I don't know who else watched The Cape.
Well, I was going to say, Greg, this was your first episode of The Cape. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, based on everyone's rave reviews from the last podcast, I decided to actually set my DVR. And I thought it was very entertaining. Although I'm kind of trying to figure out what Summer Glau is doing, because okay, she's not playing this weird girl who was brainwashed, you know, from the
river,
and she's not playing a Terminator, but she's still weird. I mean, I don't get, you know, it's like can she play a normal person on TV?
Well,
have a normal look though.
Yeah, and also I think what Summer's thing is it's not necessarily about, you know, is she a secret killing machine? Is she a robot? It's more that on Terminator and Firefly and on this, she always plays people that are obviously attractive, you know, obviously these kind of like attractive young women, but they have something about them that you don't quite know if you can trust. And that's about right. You don't know if you can quite trust her as a robot. You don't really know if you can quite trust the innocent younger sister of the guy on Firefly. And in here, it seems like she's trying to help the guy, but we don't quite know about her past, because I think they call her, is it Othello? Is that her code name?
I can't remember what the code name is, but they did the big reveal at the end where you figure out that Chess is her father. Or unless you guys weren't paying attention.
Wait, what?
I missed that.
Do you not? Okay, and during the episode...
Because she's dancing at the end?
Well, because he, Chess, at the beginning of the episode, said he's looking for his daughter. He's like, I'd recognize my daughter anywhere. That's not her. Let's find my daughter, right? And so he's looking for his daughter. And then later in the episode, they're talking about her having a bad relationship with her father and that she grew up rich, but that something bad had happened to her, right?
And then you're right. I don't know how I missed that. Yeah, you're right.
And
you're
then totally at the very end, they have her dancing, and then he's playing with the ballerina. Dun, dun, dun. That's
it. You're totally right. And I remember, you know what? It's funny is because at the very end when they showed the ballerina thing with the bad guy, I was like, why are they showing that? I don't know how I didn't get that. Yeah, you're right. You're totally right. So there you go.
Yes. So that's the big conflict. She's helping the Cape, yet she's Chess's daughter, and I'm sure that when the Cape finds out, that's going to be an issue. So they've set up the tension. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and in a way, that also means that essentially that was also part of the theme of the show then, because basically the theme of the show was that there's something from the past that is coming to wreak havoc on our heroes, right? Except it was the Russian bad guy. And that he's the one who basically looks at her and is like, you're clearly a spoiled rich kid, but there's something about you. I mean, he even says that.
Right, right.
So you're right, yeah. So that's, I guess, arc-wise, that's what it's really more about.
Well, I'm just wondering what they're going to do about this reporter thing. Are they just going to have her get closer and closer, closer to the truth, you know, and, you know, she's always going to be, you know, one step behind finding out the, you know, the identity, or are they...
Wait, what reporter?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
The reporter. The reporter who...
Are you talking about his wife?
Yeah, the wife who's a lawyer?
Because he didn't see the premiere. Are you talking about the woman who's on the show? And yeah, she does seem to be dealing with like a lot of paperwork. And like,
she's got pictures and stuff?
Yeah, and she was running around interviewing people.
Yeah, that's his wife. That's the Cape's wife. And
she's trying to prove that she's trying to basically prove that her husband, who I don't know if she really believes he's dead, but I think she's trying to prove that her husband really wasn't this terrible person that it came out. So that's kind of her thing.
And she's a lawyer. She's not a reporter.
Okay. Yeah, she's a lawyer.
Okay, so that was all in the premiere, which I missed, I guess.
Right.
I mean, you were essentially right that she's basically a woman trying to piece things together. That is true. But you didn't realize what the connections were.
Right. So, yeah, that's the fact that she went to the black guy she went to help her out.
He's the bad guy.
He was her husband's partner, and he's the one that betrayed her husband and got him framed to be Chess. So the fact that as soon as she finds out the information, she tells him. He then, of course, sends the guys to round up all those people and send them away. So any information she gives him is going to be used wrong. So she needs to stop trusting him, but of course she doesn't know that. Anyway, let's move on to Being Human, Greg.
You know, being Human, I really like their ad campaign. But really? After everybody, all you guys, last podcast, all said how god-awful it was going to be. So I've never seen it. I haven't seen it yet. But I thought their ad campaigns weren't bad. I was kind of like, oh, this looks like an okay show. But I haven't seen it, so.
All right. Great.
Well, since I'm the one in the predictions at the end of the year said that I predicted this show will fail, I decided that it was my responsibility to watch it so that I could destroy it, you know, with credibility, I guess. So I actually watched it on Monday night, and it actually wasn't that bad. They're doing something different than what the British show is doing. They're kind of taking the characters in a little bit different direction. For example, in the British show, we all know that I guess in the British show, it's George who's the werewolf. And then in the American show, it's Josh who's the werewolf. And they both wear a Star of David, which apparently doesn't affect the vampire guy, but it ends up affecting Herrig in the British show, or Bishop in the... This is going to get confusing.
Just talk about the American. Use the American names, just not to confuse yourself or our listeners. Okay.
So just to let everyone know, Josh is the werewolf guy. Aiden is the vampire guy, and Sally is the ghost.
Okay.
And so what they're doing with Josh is they actually go more into his relationship with his family. He ends up seeing his sister in the first episode, and his sister kind of wants to know what's going on because he just kind of disappeared. Basically once he got the curse, and so there's some interesting dynamics with their relationship and how he's going to try to, you know, how he was trying to keep, you know, what was going on with him a secret. But actually there was a pretty big cliffhanger at the end of the episode, that you know, they're trying to find a way for Josh to change, you know, or a room for Josh to change in, kind of like in the British show. And he actually gets stuck in that room, and he's about to change, and his sister is also stuck in the room with him.
That's different.
Yeah, yeah. So they are doing something different. I'll keep watching it. It's different because they're American, and so they're trying to do a bunch of American slang, you know, to kind of be hip and I guess, you know, modern. But
My other question: does anybody have standout charisma? Like in the British version, the werewolf carries the show.
Yeah, no. The characters and the dialogue at this point are pretty mundane, and it's just pretty interesting, just because I've seen the British show.
Okay.
I don't know if it's ready to stand on its own yet.
All right. I'd be interested to hear from somebody who has not seen the British version, has only seen the American. So, anyway. All right. Next, we want to talk about How I Met Your Mother. Marcia gets to speak.
I love the show. As I said before, I love the ensemble. The Ted character, no, but I like he's the glue. And in this case, it's Marshall who's the center, because his father has passed away, and now they're doing the funeral. And all his whole family is able to talk about their final discussion with Dad and the wonderful things he said to them or to their children. And his was, you know, nothing. It was something about, you know, renting a movie. And it just, it killed him. Besides, his father, his best friend, was gone. And how everyone is trying to make him laugh, or he's trying to, you know, keep him distracted. And, oh, and Robin, oh my God, Robin's purse. I want her purse. She has everything you could possibly want is in her purse. She is prepared. It starts out where she has a little alcohol, where she has some boxes of tissues. But then she's got a DVD in there that somebody asks for. And after a while, she's the go-to person for the entire episode because she's got something in that purse. I want that purse. But it was just so sweet because at the end, he hears his dad. His dad does, you know, a hip phone call accident or a pocket phone call accidentally. The phone is going while he's, you know, on the plane. And he hears him say, you know, I love you and I'm proud of you. And then he says something really stupid after that. So Marshall's decided that's the part he doesn't remember. He's just going to remember the I love you part. And it was just so sweet. And I like that about the show. It was funny. It was very ensemble. Everybody had a little bit to do. I have to like it. What can I tell you?
All right. Peter?
Well, you know, I liked How I Met Your Mother the first two seasons. I really loved, I loved slapsgiving, and I loved how raunchy Barney was. And I started having problems once Barney and Robin started dating, and it never felt like they were going to get anywhere with who the mother was, which is the title of the show for Ted. And when they pulled a couple weeks ago that they killed Marshall's dad, Marshall's dad was that guy who played kind of the dullard on that show Coach in the 90s. I don't remember what the actor's name was. I was a little like, I don't know about this. So in the episode that we're talking about, you know, we just said earlier how certain things can be kind of cliche to others, and then to other people it can be like, you know, really good. And for me, I guess, this didn't work for me. I don't feel like the show, I guess I disagree with Marcia in the sense that I think the show's really good at when it wants to be, you know, mean and just crazy funny, and the energy that it has. Basically, How I Met Your Mother basically is Family Guy, except that it's, I mean, honestly, it's not as good as Family Guy, but basically that's what it is. It's basically a show that's all about flashbacks. Every episode is always, you know, this reminds me of that time, blank, and then they'll go back, you know, 5 minutes and we'll see, like, a sequence. And it when it works on How I Met Your Mother, I really like it. I you know, and mostly, and Libby, I know you've seen the show too. I mean, usually I really like Barney. I think he's totally funny. This episode, the whole phone call thing, honestly, I would have been happier if the what you just said, how, you know, the dad misdialed him in the pocket. There's this whole scene where, like, Marshall's complaining to God, which is always so touchy to do on television because it's always bordering on silly. So he's just like, complaining to God, is like, thank you, God, this is what you've done. This is the last thing my dad has. So, of course, when he's doing that, you know that any second that recording is going to go from blankness to the father going, oh, hey, Marshall, I guess I got you there. I'm really proud of you, son. And I was just like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I just, yeah, I really didn't like it. I like when the show's funny, totally like it. But I do like the characters, Marcia. It's not that I don't like the characters. I do. I just think that kind of sentiment, that's tricky to do in a 22-minute format. I think it's hard for me to get emotions like that from that type of show, if that makes sense. I love that kind of stuff, sentiment and things and other types of things. I just don't know if it's a good fit for this particular show. But obviously you liked it. It worked for you. So there you go.
Well, it wasn't 100%. I thought Bonnie, they went on too far with the video, with the in the crotch video to make him laugh. When it didn't work a couple of times, she let it go. But that Bonnie.
Oh, I remember.
So there are some things that did push too far. I did read an article where at the last couple of minutes of the previous episode, they still weren't sure how they were going to do and what they were going to say in regards to, you know, your dad is dead. So is it a perfect episode? No. Have there been better ones? Absolutely. But compared to a lot of the stuff that's on television, I'll still watch it before I watch Chuck.
All right, let's move on. Let's not bash other shows yet. All right, the next show up I have is White Collar, and I understand that nobody on this recording is watching White Collar, which I think is blasphemy or some sort. And why aren't you watching it?
I have season one. I'm just behind. I just haven't. There's just too many shows. I've heard it's good though. I just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's basically a con man working with the FBI, and what was interesting about this episode, about the premiere, was that normally the normal theme of the show is the con man has to figure out how to break his con man rules and work within the boundaries of the law and the FBI, and that's what kind of makes it entertaining. What was great about this episode is about 15 minutes in, the FBI guy gets put on suspension because the guy that they arrest has set him up to make it look like he tampered with evidence and he actually murdered somebody or whatever. And so they arrest him. Well, they don't arrest him. They suspend him while they do an investigation. So now he doesn't have a badge, but he still wants to go after this bad guy. And so they've role reversed. And now, in order to catch the bad guy, they're going to pull a con. And it's pretty cool because now it's basically McCaffrey's the con man. So it's McCaffrey plus a couple of his friends who are working on the con, and the FBI guy plus a couple of his other FBI friends, plus his wife, and they make the Burke Seven. So they name their gang. And it's pretty entertaining watching them all the law-abiding FBI agents attempting to pull a con. I thought that was pretty good. And it worked really well. And
what day is it on?
It's on Tuesdays.
Okay. Well, I have a free slot in my DVR.
I think you will not regret it. It's a really fun show. And the main guy, McCaffrey, has a lot of charm. He really cranks it up. And then the FBI guy, he's really smart. So, and they work really well together. I really like their relationship. So anyway, thumbs up for that returning. Next show we want to talk about is Harry's Law, is a show that just premiered, and I think Greg, you said you saw it.
Yes, I sure did.
And what'd you think? Should we be watching it?
You know, I'm just a big fan of the David E. Kelly shows. Anyway, I was a big fan of Boston Public.
Boston Legal.
Well, actually, Boston Public was the high school show.
Oh.
Yeah, I think he's right. I think the name changes, right?
Well, no, it's two different shows. Those are two
different shows. So there was LA Baseball, and then there was The Practice, and then there was Boston Public, which was about a high school, and then Boston Legal was kind of a spinoff of The Practice.
Right. Okay. And you liked all those shows?
Actually, after they did the spinoff and they went to Boston Legal and they just had, they had William Shatner, and I kind of tuned out at that point, but I'm a big fan of his, and especially with the news that that NBC has picked up a Wonder Woman pilot of his. That should be very interesting because he always seems to create these complex characters. But Harry's Law, it was a first episode. It was pretty entertaining. It's basically this lawyer who has been doing patent law for so many years is just completely bored doing patent law. And so she's decided to move into this rather sketchy neighborhood. And I think it's in Cincinnati, I think, is where this is, all of this takes place. And she moves into a sketchy neighborhood, into an old kind of abandoned shoe store, and she kind of sets up a law practice. And one of her former rivals in the law field actually joins her, and it was pretty entertaining. She kind of gets one of the thugs from the neighborhood kind of comes over and tries to scare her into paying him for protective services, and she ends up helping him, or at least her partner ends up helping him actually with a law case. So I'm keeping optimistic about the show. Not very much happened in the first episode, but I'm going to keep watching.
Okay. Next up is V, and for some reason, I don't know how I pick you guys. None of you watched V. I need to do a better job of picking my guests, because I love and hate V at the moment. The main storyline, I think, is really taking off. And I think last week we complained about the whole soul thing. And it feels like, talking of cliche, I mean, that's not exactly cliche, except that it seems really simple. That the V's have come up with this machine where they're going to suck out all the life out of a human, and whatever remains in the vessel must be the soul. And I was like, seriously? That's what you really think? And of course, I don't think it's going to go, their experiment is going to go very well, because I don't think they understand the concept. It's like somebody translated a language incorrectly. It's a bit weird. But other than that, because I already complained forever about it last week, the actual rest of the storyline was really pretty good. I like the priest, Jack. Father Jack is doing a really good job with, he has this vulnerability where he wants to do the right thing and follow the rules of the church, yet they have a prisoner that they have to torture for information. And they have him there at the very beginning when they first capture the prisoner, and he knows what they're going to do, but they strategically remove him from the situation when the torture has to occur, so he doesn't have the moral conflict. But he's also set up by Anna. Anna has decided that he must be part of the fifth column, and she wants to destroy him. So a lot of the plot is he's getting this interview, so she builds up his image, and then she sets up this fight to destroy his image. But he's like, you know, I'm not going to back down from Anna, I'm going to fight. And that's kind of, of course, the theme of the show is not backing down. And they've added one of the other characters. They've added the reporter officially to the fifth column cell, and it's all pretty good. Like, I really like where they're going, and now they've actually put in some doubt with Morris Chestnut's character. Anna has his daughter, and she's basically blackmailing him to give up Fifth Column members in order to get his daughter back. And they end the last scene of the episode is, I'll tell you what you want to know, I'll tell you who's Fifth Column. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, and then it goes to credits, and I'm kind of like, nah. I don't really believe he's going to do that. I figure like he's going to do something, but I don't know what. But I really don't believe he's going to betray them. I can't see it happening. Well, one, if he betrays them, then the show's over because Anna kills them. But I really don't see that happening. And I also, speaking of slightly cliche, they basically show that Anna is closer to the FBI chick's son. And they're like, oh, I think of you as a son. And they have this heartfelt hug, and the kid is all adoring of Anna. And it's actually sickening and annoying. Man, I hate that kid. And then they reverse it, and they show Anna's daughter with the FBI woman, and she's actually being more of a mother to her than Anna ever was. So they're showing like the flip side, and that part I find interesting, because I find the daughter interesting, way more interesting than the son. It's just like, I feel like he was badly cast. He sort of sucks. But anyway, that I think V is, other than the whole soul plot, I like everything else that's going on is working really well. So still thumbs up.
How are the ratings? Is this show going to last?
I actually don't know. I mean, it originally had really high ratings, but I know it's gone down since then significantly. But I'm hoping it's not going to get canceled, because I'm really starting to get into the plot. Like, it's getting pretty good. And I know I said that the event was improving, blah, 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 but if I had to choose, I'd pick V over the event at this point.
Really?
Yeah, well, the event is good, but the event is good because I feel like it has all this potential, and it really, I'm waiting for the potential to take off, but V is actually doing stuff. Stuff is happening. And I'm really getting into the stuff that's going on. So, there you go.
A science fiction show that's working well on a
major network. All right, and the next show we have to talk about is Modern Family. Go. Someone speak.
I've seen this episode twice now, because I usually watch Modern Family. I'm more of a comedy person, so I tend to watch a lot of sitcoms, assuming I don't hate it. More than once. So this episode of Modern Family, one of the main crux is of the episode is that, is it Gloria? Is that the Colombian woman?
Yes, her name is Gloria.
So Gloria sends an email to Claire, and she doesn't mean to. She basically, Ed O'Neill, her husband, you know, basically writes something like, "You are super bossy and annoying," something like that. And then she hits send. So of course she's freaked out. It's like, oh my God. Claire's going to read it, and she's going to be really mad. At the same time, Claire and Phil are getting busy because of their
No, you did not say busy. You're not allowed to say that ever again in life.
It's something Phil would do. Okay. And you know I'm just like Phil. So, but of course, the kids catch them, so then that freaks them out. So what I didn't like initially about the episode, even though I laughed, was that I was kind of like, you've got to be kidding me. This whole episode is predicated upon the misunderstanding. You know, it's like an old Three's Company episode where it's like, basically, you know, Gloria thinks that the reason Claire doesn't want to talk on the phone is because she's read the email. But of course, Claire has other things in her mind. And I was like, I can't believe we're relying on this cheesy thing. And then the same thing was Mitch and Cam want to go to this cool restaurant, and they find out that Lily gets a play date with this other kid who the mother is the owner of these restaurants. But of course, they make a stain on her carpet in her super expensive house, and they're freaking out about what to do. And again, I was just like, really? Like, this is what you're, you know, these kind of things is what you're depending on the plot around? I just tend to think of Modern Family as being smarter. However, having said all that, especially because I've seen it twice, still, you know, I really like the characters, and there's just so many little moments. I like that, you know, all the stuff that Phil says is really funny, and like, and I do. I love Mitch. I love that Mitch and Cam, basically, they want to go to this really nice restaurant because is it Shawarma King is where they're...
They're going to the crappy restaurant.
And then how in the beginning they're kind of like, I want to go to a restaurant where they know my name when I come in. And at the end of the episode, the Shawarma King is like, Mitch, your order is up. And he's like, hey, he knows your name. I mean, see, it still makes me laugh because I really like the character. It's kind of like Marcia with, you know, How I Met Mother. It's like, you know, I think if you're a fan of the show, you will give a lot of leeway for plot weaknesses because you just really like the characters. And I do. I really like the Modern Family characters. So even though I don't think this was like a great plot episode, and I think, Livia, you would agree, you know, I still enjoy it because I like the show. So
I thought Modern Family was, I agree. I thought some of it was kind of cliche, again, using the word, especially with the misunderstanding, because I kind of roll my eyes at that. But I have to say, the bit at the end where they're trying to figure out the password, and they're like, I accidentally emailed you a naked picture of myself, and Phil's like, I need to sit down. And that whole sequence right there in the kitchen almost made the whole thing worth it. That was pretty funny. I really enjoyed that. And Mitch and Cam, of course, I knew they were going to blame the little kid for the carpet, but I didn't expect him to be allergic to strawberries and her needing...
That was fun, yes.
Yeah, all like of that, that, I was like, are they going to let this child be stabbed, you know, in order to not have to pay for the carpet? Like, all that was pretty good. But I agree with you, the initial setup was kind of shaky, but then once it all comes down, it works. The kids, I actually felt, were the weak link.
Well, I think those kids are usually the weak link, and also... we had no Manny this week.
Oh,
that's
true.
He's the best kid on the show.
That's very true. And I think those kids are weak links individually, let alone a scene where it's the three of them just sitting on a bench talking.
I totally thought that. You're talking about when they're at the gas station?
Yeah, I was like, oh.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, this isn't that interesting. I was like, you know. I mean, I don't hate them, but yeah, they're not. They can give me a line or two, and I'll go, oh, that's kind of funny. But having to depend on those three actors for like 5 minutes, I was just like, like, I don't know, you know, it's not that compelling.
Yeah, the three of them are not particularly good. So anyway,
but Manny, I could watch for whatever.
He's brilliant. All right, moving on. Let's talk about Big Bang. You said that was the best comedy this week.
I thought Big Bang. I have been really hard on Big Bang, but I thought this Big Bang. I think again, as a veteran sitcom nerd, to me, the best sitcom episodes of any show. How I Met Your Mother, Modern Family, going back to Friends, Seinfeld. It's always when you take your main cast and you basically pit them against each other. And what you're doing is, you can only really do this, you know, season 2, 3, or 4. It's basically once you've gotten to know the characters, because then what it is the characters get to play up their strengths and weaknesses against each other. So this episode was, also it's really cool because Big Bang, now that they've gotten Sarah Farrah Fowler and what's the blonde girl's name?
I don't even remember. But well, yeah, they've added two other main characters.
Right, so you've got three guys and three girls, and they basically go on a road trip to do this.
Actually, it's four guys and three girls, but okay.
Oh right, I'm sorry, I totally forgot about Raj. Yeah, Raj. Yeah, you're right. And so basically, they're on a road trip, and then they're going to be at a hotel, and it was great. You know, and another thing too is I feel like. Okay, like example, How I Met Your Mother, even when I like How I Met Your Mother, sometimes I think that How I Met Your Mother will depend too much on Barney because, let's face it, Barney is the funniest character on the show. And in a really good episode of How I Met Your Mother, you can still use Barney, but you don't have to feel like you're using him as a crutch because everything's funny. And they do. They have episodes like that. In this episode, normally I feel like Sheldon is kind of like that. He's the extreme character, and he's the one that – if your episode's okay, you just do a bunch of stuff with him saying bazinga, and it's like, oh, that's so funny because he's hilarious. In this, he actually doesn't have that much to do because they've actually got a lot of material. There's actually a lot of really funny stuff going on. And I just, yeah, man, I thought it was awesome.
I think the best thing was the room roulette where everyone was kicking everybody out of everybody else's room. Like, all that was pretty good.
But I also liked Penny getting kicked out of the first car.
Oh, yeah.
I really championed for you to be in this car. And she doesn't. Then later she's like, "I'm sorry. Can I please come back to the other car?" Like,
that was pretty good. Red leader to red two.
Right. Yeah.
What'd you say, Marcia? Go ahead.
While watching the show, halfway through it, I went, I actually like this. I'm actually enjoying it. Sheldon got very little to do. I really like this. It was very ensemble. Everyone back and forth and around, and I thought it was the best one they've ever done.
I also like the conference, too.
Yes. Because it starts off small, and you just know where it's going to go. And it was a little bit of a I Love Lucy moment there, but I liked it. Well, you just know that if there was a gorgeous ex-boyfriend at the beginning, somehow that gorgeous ex-boyfriend is going to pop up again later on.
Right, and that's Rick Fox, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Yeah, it was really good, man. This season's been, you know, admittedly, part of the problem this season hasn't been their fault because Kaylee Cuoco, did she get in a, was it a skiing accident? Something happened with her foot, right?
She broke her leg.
She broke her leg, so an integral character of the show was gone for, like, you know, a few episodes. And it really, you know, it probably threw the writers off. And yeah, I mean, so there are problems this season that I don't blame. It's not their fault, you know, like, but the fact is, as a viewer, yeah, I just haven't been as impressed. But this was good.
Greg, you had an opinion?
No. I just thought it was funny. The whole show was funny, and I enjoyed every scene.
It's very general. I appreciate that.
Sorry.
all right. The next show we want to talk about is 30 Rock. And I have to say a comment real quick on 30 Rock, which was the brilliance of the title and the misunderstanding of the entire situation was fantastic. Because I start the episode and it goes, Mrs. Donaghy. And I was like, oh, he got married. I was actually a little sad that he got married because I was one of those people that kind of thought that Liz and Jack kind of belonged together in a strange sort of way. Not like a shippy way like I normally do, but it's their relationship is so interesting that I love them together. And I was kind of sad that he was getting married. So then when it was like Mrs. Donaghy, I was like, oh, he's married the other chick. All right. And then... And then within, like, very quickly, when he sees the marriage license, I was like, oh, he married Liz. I knew it just from his reaction that what had happened. And I, like, the entire episode was so great. Like, and I especially love the end sequence when they're talking to the therapist. And the therapist, well, not the therapist, it was the guy from HR. It was the HR guy who thought he was a therapist.
Right, and, but he's almost acting like a fanfic person.
Right, and that's what I loved about it. Like, he was ticking off everything that they do.
He's like, do you do this together? Do you argue about blankety blank? And it's always kind of a will they or won't they type of thing.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And I like that because it was like, that's exactly what I was thinking. So I liked it, but then it still makes me sad because at the end, they're still going to get an annulment and he's still going to marry the other chick and I'm still sad. But
my only reason I would put Big Bang above this episode, although I did think it was pretty funny. Like, I thought it was better than Modern Family this week. And I always think 30 Rock can be a little hit or miss. My only thing would be kind of what we were just saying about, like Marcia was saying about using the cast. The Liz and Jack stuff, them going against each other, they're basically trying to sabotage each other. Because remember, because basically she's trying to blackmail him with, she's like, well, I'm not going to sign the divorce unless you make the girly show. You know, because I think they've got like budget cuts or something. Right. So all that stuff's great.
Yeah, for Cable Town, yes.
For right.
Cable Town, right. Which is, of course, yes, I know a lot about that, but I won't say anything more. But that was all great. But I didn't really think they had much for Tracy and Jenna to do. And I think on a great 30 Rock episode, every character has something great to do. And really, like the Jenna thing being married with the guy and Kenneth, that was all right. Like, I didn't really think that was that funny.
I agree. You're right.
The thing that was supposed to be is a way of showing. Remember, the guy said, oh, I forgot you work here. Because they're not using the rest of the cast members for quite a while. Or at least they're not using them correctly. And so they're able to use this guy to say, yeah, we kind of realize we really haven't been doing ensemble like we should be doing.
And they need to get back to that. Because I think that even though Jack and Liz are the best part of the show, I still like having every character used.
I will actually disagree in that I think that Jenna and Tracy could drop off the face of the show and I would not care. They don't. Not for me.
Come on, the Jenna Miwon food, you liked that. That was pretty funny.
Named one episode out of what are we on, season four? Like, I really don't like Jenna or Tracy, either one of them. And I really...
They can back down. See, that's the problem I had with Sheldon on Big Bang Theory, is that they took two characters here, and they made too many episodes about them instead of about the rest of the writers.
Writers?
And, well, on 30 Rock.
You've got the
writers. So what they've done is they've taken, instead of taking one character, they've taken two characters. And everything is about them. And it's enough that they already think everything is about them. That's how they're written. We don't want to be only dealing with them. We want the rest of the cast.
I really don't.
And that's what they're missing.
I really don't. I only care about Jack and Liz. Period. Full stop. The end. If the show was only about Jack and Liz, I would be very happy. I find that the other storylines are a distraction from what I want to see.
I think it's because, well, I guess I'm agreeing with both Marcia and Livia. I'm agreeing with Livia because I think that most of the time, because of the popularity of Jack and Liz, and to be fair, the structure, they are kind of the main characters. I think that Tracy and Jenna and Kenneth and the other writer, the guy with the crazy hat and stuff, like, I think that they don't usually have a lot to do. So Libya's right in the sense that she's like, I don't really care about characters. But I agree with Marcia that a traditional really good sitcom balances everything. And like, that's what a really good sitcom does. It makes you really enjoy everything. And in a really good 30 Rock episode, the whole thing works. It all works.
Thing is, if that was true, then I would enjoy Liz and any of the other characters together equally as much as I enjoy Liz and Jack together, which is never the case.
Like, you don't like Liz when she's getting razzed by the writing staff? I think that's kind of funny, usually.
Yeah, it's okay for about 5 seconds, but not for a full episode.
Oh, I don't mind that. I usually get, or I liked, you know, or when we saw everything from Kenneth's eyes and he sees everything as Muppets. I mean, that doesn't
happen. Okay, that was funny. I will give you that.
See, there are things you can do with the other characters that are like, oh, that's pretty funny, you know, like, so.
All right, let's move on to Fringe. Go.
I liked it. I'm a little hesitant for the first 20 minutes that basically this episode was about. Every now and then we get an episode about the Observers. I think last season we had a really good episode about the Observers. And then this episode we had, and I think, Libya, you texted me at night and you were like, this Observer is not acting like much of an Observer because he's acting on everything. And I like the idea, but honestly, I kind of feel like the Observer, nothing against the actor, but like the kind of monotone way they talk, I think they're kind of a less is more thing. Like, you want to know how important they are and how powerful they are, but you don't want to use them too much. And this episode, I think, really kind of went back and forth on that line. I still thought it was a good episode because, honestly, I mean, you got Christopher Lloyd. That was awesome. With Walter, that, you know, with Bishop, that's
fantastic.
And
time travel.
And time travel. So there's a lot of other really good things. I was really kind of weird on the Observer thing. And I have to admit, I actually did not quite figure out what the point was, you know, and how it all came together. Because they kept showing that Walter's making that special milk concoction. And I'm like, okay, well, clearly Peter's going to drink the milk. Well, I'm not sure why that's that big of a deal. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then, of course, you have the big sting at the end, which is whether or not Walter is at a point where he can sacrifice his son. And that's really what it was all about.
You knew that Peter was going to drink the milk? Like, I knew somebody
was going to
drink the milk.
Well, how did you know that?
No. I knew he was... Wait. You're saying you did or didn't know?
I did not know. How did you know?
I did not know until he got back to the base.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, he's going to drink the milk. But I couldn't figure out why it was bad. That was my problem. Was I was like, well, I don't understand why. I'm like, so he's got a headache, so he's going to want to take aspirin. And he's like, oh, he's going to go to the fridge. I just didn't know why it was bad. That was the problem. Yeah. I was like, I don't know why that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
So.
After all of that, I was sitting there. I watched the whole episode, and I still had a furrowed brow because I'm like, was that whole thing just so they wouldn't drink the milk?
No.
It was two things. It was one, to make sure Walter doesn't die. I think Walter's right about that. But the big thing is that the Observers were like, we have to put Peter in a situation and see what Walter does. Will Walter say, you know, if we tell you your son might die if he goes to save this girl, will you let him go? And he did. He did let him go. You know, Peter talked him into it. So that, to, I think, Libby, am I right? I think that's the main
That was the point. Yes, that was the entire point of the exercise.
Yep. Yeah, my wonderful high-definition television glitched right at that critical moment when they were talking right at the end. And I was, like, screaming at my television because I didn't know what they were talking about.
Yes. It was. I really enjoyed this episode, and against my will, I am falling for the Olivia and Peter ship. Now it's interesting. Before I was like, ew, I don't want it. Now I find it interesting because it's so complicated and angsty, and I think I might be on board, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, I'll say that I think that Anna Torv, even though I always didn't hate her as much as you did, I do think that Anna Torv really stepped up this season, and I feel bad for her. But are you saying the whole, like, you know, I bought this book, but it was really for the other girl, but it was for you, like that? I didn't really like that much. You liked that?
I not necessarily the book, but the emotion behind it. Like, the book is an item, it doesn't matter to me. But the emotion behind what's going on with him, like, Peter's got all this guilt because he didn't know the difference between the Olivias. Like, he had a gut feeling, but he didn't follow through with it because he was thinking with the wrong part of his body. And he's got all this guilt about it, but he still loves her. And he doesn't know how to make it right, you know? And so that angst, and she still cares about him, but she feels, like, all this anger at him, and she doesn't know how to make that right. So all of that complicated emotion that came out in the conversation about the book is what I like. And so Okay. Now I'm kind of like, all right, now this relationship is really interesting.
I see what you're saying.
I think that the whole, you know, observer, I appreciate you editing my text that I sent to you. I put some exclamation points and explicitives, or what is the word? Expletives. That's the word. In the middle of that text.
Libby. I mean, you know, the characters were introduced as observers, but yet this observer saved Walter
and Peter
from drowning. So he set a bunch of things in motion that have caused, like, this ripple effect, which is, you know, changed the future, or one possible future, I guess. And now I'm trying to figure out, is he trying to fix that, or is he just trying to, you know, kind of mitigate the damage as much as he can? Or I'm trying to figure out, I guess, you know.
Well, he can't fix it at this point because it's already happened. Yeah. But there is still, I'm sure there was a reason why he saved Peter in the first place. And that, I think that's what's going to come out. But I don't think what he anticipated, because he saved Peter for a specific future that he's like, okay, we're going to go to this future here. So he saves Peter to get to that future. What he didn't anticipate was all the unforeseen ramifications of him saving Peter, that other people died because of what he did. And so now he's trying to give a little bit of closure to those people, trying to help them out, but he's also trying to make sure that what he did will come to the conclusion, I think, that he wants. Like, he saved Peter for a reason, and obviously Peter has to be sacrificed in some way. And he wants to make sure that all the ripple effects, everything that he's done, is for that purpose. So I think that's what all the tests and things are about. But yeah, watching the observer use his magic, I put in quotes here, air quotes, magic powers, to start steal a truck and beat the crap out of these criminals, because we've never actually seen them do anything before. So it was actually kind of surprising that they're super strong, that, you know, he can catch bullets with his hands and stuff. Not surprising in that I don't believe it, but still surprising.
So I would agree. I feel like the observers sometimes are a little, I forgot what that term is. Is it deus ex machina or whatever? Where it's
deus,
like,
ex machina is how I machina. Say it, but I'm sure I say it wrong. Machina,
right, but I kind of feel, even, I mean, really, since the first season of Fringe, the very fact that they're called the observers, you know, this very literal, like, very in-your-face word, to me almost feels like they almost smack of something that's deliberately gray and obtuse, and it almost really, they're almost kind of like a, you know, a writer's, something that you can use in the script to kind of answer away certain things, but you don't have to over-explain it because you'll just accept it. So you're right. So the more you do with the observer, if they're like suddenly kicking ass with guns and everything, then they start to become a little more grounded, and I'm not sure if that works for the observers.
Right. I totally agree with you, but I thought this episode was still on track.
Of course. Fringe has been really good this season. Yeah. So yeah, great. You know, still like it.
Was I the only one that was just a little bit uncomfortable? Christopher Lloyd kind of in, like, sort of an aging band member sort of outfit.
You know, I kind of liked it. Like,
yeah, it worked
for
me.
He was just in Piranha 3D, and I know that sounds terrible, but it's actually a pretty fun, cheesy movie. But in that movie, he's kind of reprising his Doc Brown Back to the Future role with the crazy hair and everything. And in this, I was like, oh, he's kind of doing something. He's not just doing his Doc Brown thing. So I actually kind of like that. I thought it was kind of a different role for him.
And he got to show more emotion. He got to go through the whole emotional range. I thought it was, for an actor, I thought it was a really good opportunity for him.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It was just the whole, like, wearing the chains and the leather. It was just giving me the heebie-jeebies a little bit.
You know, I didn't see the episode, but just from your description, I have the heebie-jeebies.
All right, and the last thing we want to talk about is the season premiere of Spartacus: Gods of the Arena. And because some of the people on this podcast have not yet either finished watching the episode, because one, Netflix was freaking out last night and wouldn't play it correctly, I had to go to different, my Xbox wouldn't, but then my TiVo would, and it was a weird thing. But anyway, people had problems trying to watch it last night, so I'm going to be courteous to them and not overtly give any spoilers. But I still want to discuss it a little bit and compare season one to the premiere of season two. And season one, I thought, ended fantastic. Oh, and by the way, if you haven't seen season one, I know I thought that people could watch the prequel and be fine. But if that's true, you must have someone else fast forward through the previously. Because literally, the previously is everything that happens in season one. So
I don't think you can safely fast forward through it without visually seeing it, and you gotta watch season one first.
Well, I was gonna say you have someone else fast forward it through you. I don't know, but I mean that previously is like 5 minutes long, and it literally gives away everything that happens in season one. So be careful if you don't want to get spoiled for season one. But it's like, I think it's supposed to be like 5 years before or more, somewhere in there. Everyone looks a little bit younger. Crixus has long hair. Like, everything's a little bit different. But it's still, I thought it was really, it goes back to the original tone of Spartacus, like in the early episodes, at first. And I was kind of worried, like, at the beginning, because I was like, oh, are we just doing fighting and sex? Is that all that we're going to get in Gods of the Arena? But
is it fighting and sex? I mean, those two ingredients right there make a good TV show, wouldn't you say?
Yes, but the thing that I loved about Spartacus was that's what they gave you at the beginning to draw you in, and then next thing you know, you're in the middle of a brilliant story. You know, so I was a little bit worried in like the first 15, 20 minutes they were literally cutting between a fight scene and an orgy. So you were going back, and I was like, really? Come on. So I was a little disappointed at the beginning, but I have to say the additions of the two characters, they added someone named Gannicus, who is brilliant. That was a brilliant addition, and he's basically like this, he basically loves his life as the top gladiator, where he's super arrogant. He's always drunk, and he's always sleeping with women, and he's just like the stereotypical macho guy, which but he's got this charm, but he's so arrogant, and he's entertaining. So I think that was a brilliant addition, because he's not like any gladiator we've seen from season one. Season one, all the gladiators were all super serious. They were all like, we will do this for our house, you know? They were all like 100% in, and this guy is just like, I'm having a good time. If I win, I get to sleep with a bunch of women. This is awesome. So he has a completely different attitude. So I think that's interesting. And they added someone named Gaia, who is Lucy Lawless's friend. And she's interesting. She's from something, and I can't think of what it is. She's famous. Oh, and I'm blanking. But she's, as an actress-wise, I think she's a really good addition to the show, too. So I'm really excited about the new characters. And the only thing that I will say that doesn't really give anything away is that because it's a flashback and Batiatus is brand new at being the head of the whole gladiator thing, and he hasn't quite figured out who he is yet, like he's kind of fumbling around trying to figure out what kind of guy he is, there's this moment that happens at the end where something kind of bad happens. And they show it in the trailer. They show in the trailer what happens, but something bad happens to him, and I'm sitting there watching the show, and I'm like, these guys don't know who he is. Like, because I know who Batiatus is now, after I've seen season one, and I understand how he will react to this kind of situation, I'm like, these guys don't realize that they're in trouble. Like, they have no idea, like, how much trouble they're in, because I understand how his mind works. But the thing is what's interesting is he hasn't quite figured that out yet. So that's the thing that's really exciting. And also, because we're doing flashbacks, some of the characters who were enemies in season one are now best friends in the prequel, which is sort of weird. But now I'm like, well, what the heck happened to make them enemies? You know, like, so you're waiting for that. So I'm totally in. I'm definitely in. But like I said, I was a little worried at the very beginning with the cross-cutting between brutal arena fighting and an orgy. I was like, eh, this feels cheap. But they quickly started moving to the political plots and getting into the mind of Badiatis and thinking of the fact that, what is Lucy Lawless? It's Lucretia. That Lucretia was totally different. And all that stuff is all pretty interesting. And, oh, you get all this back history on Doctori. Like, all that stuff is great. And it's like, it's Ash's first week or two being a gladiator. And I remember in first season, I hated Ash. And now he's still a jerk. I mean, he's not, that, you know, going back in time doesn't cure him from being a jerk. But it's interesting. And all that stuff is, it's got me excited. So, yay. Make sure you guys watch it.
Yeah. How many episodes in this prequel?
Only six.
Only six. Okay.
Yeah. And then, like I said, they start, as I said at the top of the show, they start season two shooting in a couple months. So I think this time next year we'll get the full 13 episodes of season two. And speaking of Spartacus, Gods of the Arena, I got to do an interview with some of the cast, and I will be putting up that podcast at the same time that this podcast goes up. So look for both.
Well, they're not fighting in the sex, you know, because that's a big part of Spartacus.
I know, but I enjoy the actual plot. Like, I, you know, people read Playboy for the articles. I actually watch Spartacus for the story.
Nobody reads Playboy for the articles.
I don't know. Well, anyway, all right. Anybody got any final comments? No. Dead silence. All right. So we will be signing off. Make sure you send us feedback at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at TV Campfire, and we're on Facebook and tvcampfire.com for the blog. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye. Later.